Chapter 14. Nothing of trepidation, but merely uplifted my eyes with a leisurely movement, and looked carefully around the room for the intruder. I could not, however, perceive anyone at all. Resumed the voice, as I continued my survey, "You must be so drunk as the pig, then, for not see me as I sit here at your side." Hereupon I bethought me of looking immediately before my nose, and there, sure enough, confronting me at the table, sat a personage nondescript, although not altogether indescribable. His body was a wine pipe, or a rum puncheon, or something of that character, and had a truly Falstaffian air. In its nether extremity were inserted two kegs, which seemed to answer all the purposes of legs. For arms there dangled from the upper portion of the carcass two tolerably long bottles, with the necks outward for hands. All the head that I saw the monster possessed of was one of those Hessian canteens which resemble a large snuff box with a hole in the middle of the lid. This canteen, with a funnel on its top, like a cavalier cap slouched over the eyes, was set on edge upon the puncheon, with the hole toward myself. And through this hole, which seemed puckered up like the mouth of a very precise old maid, the creature was emitting certain rumbling and grumbling noises which he evidently intended for intelligible talk. "Zay," said he, "you most be drunk as the pig, for zit there, and not zee me zit here, and I zay, do, you most be pig or vool as the goose, for to disbelief that is print in the print. Tis the truth that it is every vord obit. Who are you, pray?" said I, with much dignity, although somewhat puzzled. "How did you get here? And what is it you are talking about?" "Zee vor how I come here," replied the figure, "that is none of your business. And as vor that I be talking about, I be talk about that I think proper. And as vor who I be, why that is the very thing I come here for to let you zee for yourself." "Who are a drunken vagabond," said I, "and I shall ring the bell and order my footman to kick you into the street." He said the fellow, who exclamation point that you can't do. "And do," said I, "what do you mean?" "I can't do what in the pell," he replied, attempting a grin with his little villainous mouth. Upon this I made an effort to get up, in order to put my threat into execution. But the ruffian just reached across the table very deliberately, and hitting me a tap on the forehead with the neck of one of the long bottles, knocked me back into the armchair from which I had half arisen. I was utterly astounded, and, for a moment, was quite at a loss what to do. In the meantime, he continued his talk. "Uzi," said he, "it is tea best for zit still, and now you shall know who I be. Look at me. Zee exclamation point I am T angel of T odd, and D odd enough to," I ventured to reply, but I was always under the impression that an angel had wings. "E wing," he cried, highly incensed, "that I pee, do mit T wing question mark main god. Do you take me for a chicken?" Oh no," I replied, much alarmed, "you are no chicken, certainly not. L, then, zit still and pet up yourself, or I'll wrap you again mid me wrist. It is tea chicken ab tea wing, un tea owl ab tea wing, un tea imp ab tea wing, un tea head toofel ab tea wing. Tea angel ab not tea wing, and I am tea angel of tea odd, and de your business with me at present, is it?" "Why business," ejaculated the thing, "why that a low bred buppy you mose pee vor, to ask a gentleman and an angel about his pizziness." This language was rather more than I could bear, even from an angel. So, plucking up courage, I seized a salt cellar which lay within reach, and hurled it at the head of the intruder. Either he dodged, however, or my aim was inaccurate, for all I accomplished was the demolition of the crystal which protected the dial of the clock upon the mantelpiece. As for the angel, he evinced his sense of my assault by giving me two or three hard consecutive raps upon the forehead as before. These reduced me at once to submission, and I am almost ashamed to confess that either through pain or vexation, there came a few tears into my eyes. "Ain God," said the angel of the odd, apparently much softened at my distress, Main God, T-Man is either fairy drunk or fairy zory. You mose not drink it so strong, you mose put tea water in tea wine. Here, drink this, like a good veller, and don't cry now don't. Hereupon the angel of Yod replenished my goblet, which was about a third full of port, with a colorless fluid, that he poured from one of his hand bottles. I observed that these bottles had labels about their necks, and that these labels were inscribed Kirschenwasser. The considerate kindness of the angel mollified me in no little measure, and, aided by the water with which he diluted my port more than once, I at length regained sufficient temper to listen to his very extraordinary discourse. I cannot pretend to recount all that he told me, but I gleaned from what he said that he was the genius who presided over the contretemps of mankind, and whose business it was to bring about the odd accidents which are continually astonishing the skeptic. Once or twice, upon my venturing to express my total incredulity in respect to his pretensions, he grew very angry indeed, so that at length I considered it the wiser policy to say nothing at all, and let him have his own way. He talked on, therefore, at great length, while I merely leaned back in my chair with my eyes shut, and amused myself with munching raisins, and filliping the stems about the room. But, by and by, the angel suddenly construed this behavior of mine into contempt. He arose in a terrible passion, slouched his funnel down over his eyes, swore a vast oath, uttered a threat of some character which I did not precisely comprehend, and finally made me a low bow and departed, wishing me, in the language of the Archbishop in Gil Blas, beaucoup de bon heure un peu plus de bon sens. His departure afforded me relief. The very few glasses of Laffitte that I had sipped had the effect of rendering me drowsy, and I felt inclined to take a nap of some 15 or 20 minutes, as is my custom after dinner. At 6 I had an appointment of consequence, which it was quite indispensable that I should keep. The policy of insurance for my dwelling house had expired the day before, and, some dispute having arisen, it was agreed that, at 6, I should meet the board of directors of the company and settle the terms of a renewal. Glancing upward at the clock on the mantelpiece, for I felt too drowsy to take out my watch, I had the pleasure to find that I had still 25 minutes to spare. It was 5:30. I could easily walk to the insurance office in 5 minutes, and my usual siestas had never been known to exceed 5:20. I felt sufficiently safe, therefore, and composed myself to my slumbers forthwith. Having completed them to my satisfaction, I again looked toward the timepiece, and was half inclined to believe in the possibility of odd accidents when I found that, instead of my ordinary 15 or 20 minutes, I had been dozing only 3. For it still wanted 7:20 of the appointed hour. I betook myself again to my nap, and at length a second time awoke, when, to my utter amazement, it still wanted 6:27. I jumped up to examine the clock, and found that it had ceased running. My watch informed me that it was 7:30, and, of course, having slept 2 hours, I was too late for my appointment. "Tea will make no difference," I said. "Colin can call at the office in the morning and apologize. In the meantime, what can be the matter with the clock?" Upon examining it, I discovered that one of the raisin stems which I had been filliping about the room during the discourse of the Angel of Yod had flown through the fractured crystal, and lodging, singularly enough, in the keyhole, with an end projecting outward, had thus arrested the revolution of the minute hand. "H," said I see how it is. This thing speaks for itself. A natural accident, such as will happen now and then." I gave the matter no further consideration, and at my usual hour retired to bed. Here, having placed a candle upon a reading stand at the bedhead, and having made an attempt to peruse some pages of the Omnipresence of the Deity, I unfortunately fell asleep in less than 20 seconds, leaving the light burning as it was. My dreams were terrifically disturbed by visions of the Angel of Yod. Methody stood at the foot of the couch, drew aside the curtains, and, in the hollow, detestable tones of a Rumpuncheon, menaced me with the bitterest vengeance for the contempt with which I had treated him. He concluded a long harangue by taking off his funnel cap, inserting the tube into my gullet, and thus deluging me with an ocean of Kirschen Wasser, which he poured, in a continuous flood, from one of the long-necked bottles that stood him instead of an arm. My agony was at length insufferable, and I awoke just in time to perceive that a rat had ran off with the lighted candle from the stand, but not in season, to prevent his making his escape with it through the hole. Very soon, a strong suffocating odor assailed my nostrils. The house, I clearly perceived, was on fire. In a few minutes the blaze broke forth with violence, and in an incredibly brief period the entire building was wrapped in flames. All egress from my chamber, except through a window, was cut off. The crowd, however, quickly procured and raised a long ladder. By means of this, I was descending rapidly and in apparent safety, when a huge hog, about whose rotund stomach, and indeed about whose whole air and physiognomy, there was something which reminded me of the angel of the odd, when this hog, I say, which hitherto had been quietly slumbering in the mud, took it suddenly into his head, that his left shoulder needed scratching, and could find no more convenient rubbing post than that afforded by the foot of the ladder. In an instant I was precipitated, and had the misfortune to fracture my arm. This accident, with the loss of my insurance, and with the more serious loss of my hair, the whole of which had been singed off by the fire, predisposed me to serious impressions, so that, finally, I made up my mind to take a wife. There was a rich widow disconsolate for the loss of her seventh husband, and to her wounded spirit I offered the balm of my vows. She yielded a reluctant consent to my prayers. I knelt at her feet in gratitude and adoration. She blushed and bowed her luxuriant tresses in too close contact with those supplied me, temporarily, by Grandjean. I know not how the entanglement took place, but so it was. I arose with a shining pate, wigless, she in disdain and wrath, half buried in alien air. Thus ended my hopes of the widow by an accident which could not have been anticipated, to be sure, but which the natural sequence of events had brought about. Without despairing, however, I undertook the siege of a less implacable heart. The fates were again propitious for a brief period, but again a trivial incident interfered. Meeting my betrothed in an avenue thronged with the light of the city, I was hastening to greet her with one of my best considered bows, when a small particle of some foreign matter, lodging in the corner of my eye, rendered me, for the moment, completely blind. Before I could recover my sight, the lady of my love had disappeared irreparably affronted at what she chose to consider my premeditated rudeness in passing her by ungreeted. While I stood bewildered at the suddenness of this accident, which might have happened, nevertheless, to anyone under the sun, and while I still continued incapable of sight, I was accosted by the angel of the odd, who proffered me his aid with a civility which I had no reason to expect. He examined my disordered eye with much gentleness and skill, informed me that I had a drop in it, and, whatever a drop was, took it out, and afforded me relief. I now considered it high time to die, since fortune had so determined to persecute me, and accordingly made my way to the nearest river. Here, divesting myself of my clothes, for there is no reason why we cannot die as we were born, I threw myself headlong into the current, the sole witness of my fate being a solitary crow that had been seduced into the eating of brandy-saturated corn, and so had staggered away from his fellows. No sooner had I entered the water than this bird took it into its head to fly away with the most indispensable portion of my apparel. Postponing, therefore, for the present, my suicidal design, I just slipped my nether extremities into the sleeves of my coat, and betook myself to a pursuit of the felon with all the nimbleness which the case required and its circumstances would admit. But my evil destiny attended me still. as I ran at full speed, with my nose up in the atmosphere, and intent only upon the purloiner of my property, I suddenly perceived that my feet rested no longer upon terra firma. The fact is, I had thrown myself over a precipice, and should inevitably have been dashed to pieces, but for my good fortune in grasping the end of a long guide rope, which depended from a passing balloon. As soon as I sufficiently recovered my senses to comprehend the terrific predicament in which I stood or rather hung, I exerted all the power of my lungs to make that predicament known to the runout overhead. But for a long time I exerted myself in vain. Either the fool could not, or the villain would not perceive me. Meantime the machine rapidly soared, while my strength even more rapidly failed. I was soon upon the point of resigning myself to my fate, and dropping quietly into the sea, when my spirits were suddenly revived, by hearing a hollow voice from above, which seemed to be lazily humming an opera air. Looking up, I perceived the Angel of the Odd. He was leaning with his arms folded, over the rim of the car, and with a pipe in his mouth, at which he puffed leisurely, seemed to be upon excellent terms with himself and the universe. I was too much exhausted to speak, so I merely regarded him with an imploring air. For several minutes, although he looked me full in the face, he said nothing. At length, removing carefully his meerschaum from the right to the left corner of his mouth, he condescended to speak. "Ho, P.U.," he asked, "and what dirtiful you P.U. do dare to this piece of impudence, cruelty, and affectation?" I could reply only by ejaculating the monosyllable "Elp, L.P.," echoed the ruffian not one. "There is teapottle, help yourself, and P. Tamid." With these words he let fall a heavy bottle of Kirschenwasser which, dropping precisely upon the crown of my head, caused me to imagine that my brains were entirely knocked out. Impressed with this idea, I was about to relinquish my hold and give up the ghost with a good grace, when I was arrested by the cry of the Angel, who bade me hold on. "El Dion," he said, "don't pee in theory, don't. Will you pee take the otter pottle, or have you pee got sober yet, and come to your senses?" I made haste, hereupon, to nod my head twice once in the negative, meaning thereby that I would prefer not taking the other bottle at present, and once in the affirmative, intending thus to imply that I was sober, and had positively come to my senses. By these means I somewhat softened the Angel. "N.D.U. Pilaf, 10, he inquired, "at T last?" "U Pilaf, 10, in T possibility of T odd," I again nodded my head innocent. "And do you have a pilaf in me, T Angel of T odd?" I nodded again. "And do you acknowledge that you P T blind drunk and T fool?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.